Michael.
Yes, mate.
Mr. Underwood.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming in. The secret studio that you can find, that no one can find.
It's very difficult to find. It's like almost impossible to find when it's basically tucked away on a building site by a river. Am I giving too much away? I'm giving clues now. I won't say anymore. Very hard to find.
It is. So thank you so much for coming on, mate.
That's all right.
Really, really super grateful. And obviously the show is called The Plus Ones. And I think you're super kind for coming on, because you're not really a plus one. You are still, and you were, a very successful TV presenter, host, writer. I mean, you've done loads of stuff. And obviously, you're married to the amazing
Angelica Bell,
who is just brilliant and phenomenal and gorgeous and all of them things. So you're a lucky man. So tell us what you're up to at the moment. Tell us, you know, how's life?
Well, you know,
in the lockdown, how's the madness? Right?
Well, obviously, lockdown life was total madness, because we've got two children, so we've got like a 7 and 8 year old. So that's just craziness already. So you're dealing with all the home learning of that, and dealing with all of that, and while at the same time dealing with my new job. When I say new, I've sort of been doing it now for a couple of years, but I've been teaching. So Monday to Wednesdays, I teach in a school, which has worked out really well. But of course, when it came to lockdown, I suddenly then had my two children to teach and 22 children in my class that I had to teach. So I'm having to sort of set up lessons for all of these and their parents, of course.
That just sounds,
right?
Honestly,
stressful.
Not stressful, it sounds like my version of hell.
Well, I could understand why you may think that. It was definitely extremely stressful, because of course, their parents... Parents basically had to then teach their own children. This was the problem.
Yeah.
So at that point, that was always going to be tricky, because that's not how it works. That's not the deal.
No, you pack your kids off to school. You do that for however many years of your life.
Right.
Then you pack your kids off to school.
Yeah. You teach. But of course, now I'm getting both ends of it. So I am having to teach, and I'm having to be a parent to my children and teach them. And I'll tell you now, it is a nightmare teaching your own parents. Your own children.
It is a nightmare teaching your own parents.
Teaching your own parents.
I try all the time. They don't like.
That's not going to work. No, it is a nightmare trying to teach your own children. I think because when they're your own, it's just you're able to get a bit more, I don't know, direct with them, maybe is what it is. You're like, what do you think you're doing? Whereas when it's somebody else's children, you're being a teacher, you're being professional at all times. Mm. And so it's just easier to teach them. And also they have that automatic respect, because you're the teacher and they're the pupil. But at home, it's just a bit more like, oh, it's dad, isn't it? Just dad. Oh, dad will let me off. Oh. Hey, dad, can I go get something from the fridge? Get a snack from the fridge? Well, no, because you've been working for 5 minutes on your maths. So
well,
how about you do
right.
at least 10 minutes before you think about snacks? Do you know what I mean? So it's that. And also, I am a bit soft with my own children a little bit. I know.
Now the truth comes out.
I am
now the
bit.
Truth comes out.
Angelica is definitely the force when it comes to children. I'm just like, oh, okay then. Yeah, what's that? That'll be fine. So I've got to get stronger at that. That is something. But that period with the children and that learning and throwing in my new job as well was very, very tricky, I think it's fair to say. But we got through it, and actually they were brilliant. Once they got it and they knuckled down and we sort of created a timetable for them, actually it went very smoothly. But there was a possibility of it being hellish for months. But we did escape that.
How did they deal with, because obviously all what was going on in the news and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, because it always interests me, because we kind of got quite scared, everyone, you know, and I'm quite, well, I don't care about anything, and, you know, I don't believe this, and, you know, I'm very kind of just like, I do my own thing. But the first couple of weeks with all the news and the rhetoric and the this, and I was like, hold on a minute, this is bad. I'm like, I was starting to feel a bit scared. How did that affect the kids?
Well, it's interesting because children, obviously, they're not absorbing the news like we are. They just don't have that sort of access to it. And we don't really, other than hearing maybe something on the radio, because we have the radio on in the mornings, so they might catch it then.
Mm-hmm.
I think for them, they found it difficult to understand what the difference between getting the flu or getting a cold was. And so it was trying to explain to them the seriousness of it. And you can't sit down with a 7-year-old going, oh, well, flu only kills 0.something% of people, whereas this kills one. You can't go at it like that to try and explain the difference and why it is so serious. So I think for us, it was just about driving home the basics that children would understand. So, you know, washing your hands, cleanliness, and sort of saying to them, you know, I know there's times where you've been to the loo and you haven't washed your hands, have you? Come on.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah. Yes, I am, James.
Damn.
Because you came round for dinner and I did notice.
Damn it,
you know,
found me
between
out.
Flush and door opening was very quick. That's
damn
all
it.
I'm saying.
No,
with children, you have to sort of, you talk about it in an area they understand, and they understand that about cleanliness. And so it was just about saying to them, listen, there's nothing to worry about if you think about how you are around people and think about your own cleanliness. And if you do like washing your hands for 20 seconds, which was a big thing, obviously, right at the opening, and you know,
I can't
happy
even sit,
twice,
I can't even sit down
was.
For 20 seconds, let alone wash my hands.
If it was longer than it actually, right, if you actually do it for 20 seconds, it does feel quite a long time. I don't know why that is.
My life, I'm 44 now. I'm getting, I haven't got much left.
Are you thinking wasted time?
I haven't got much left. If I'm doing that for 20 seconds,
what, every
like
time?
17 times a day.
Hang on, what, you're going to the bathroom
hold on,
17
yes,
times a day?
I probably
wow.
do.
You are very well hydrated.
I'm overly hydrated okay. with a very small bladder. I'm giving away so much.
Yeah, you are giving away way too. This is not what we signed
up
for.
Yeah, hold on. Well, yeah, let's
but yeah, but back to it. Yeah, with the children, it is just about going at it in an angle they understand. And I think then, what I wanted to do was take the fear away from it.
Yeah,
I didn't want them to be scared of it.
Well, this is the thing.
Because
it's
obviously
like,
you do... Yeah, as adults, we become more scared of it, especially if we're getting to an age, as you and I are, where we're sort of knocking on the door of vulnerable when it came to... You know what I mean?
How very dare you.
When I say vulnerable, obviously, I mean in the scheme of coronavirus.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
no, I'm just vulnerable in general.
Yeah,
no,
actually, it's all right. We're all a little bit vulnerable, it's all right. Yeah, so I don't want to get... I understand why we might have a certain amount of fear, but I think with children, it's not healthy to sort of get them scared of it.
No.
But just to inform them and make them aware of it. So it wasn't that we hid it away from them by any means. We just talked very openly and very matter-of-factly, but we didn't necessarily... I mean, the question came up about death and also people dying. Yes, people are dying, but they're normally at the time they were very old people and they already had other pre-existing health conditions, so talking to them like that it seemed to help I think
and it
just meant that they were aware and they weren't so sort of unsure about what was
they're
going on.
They're a smart couple of cookies as well. How many you two for parents as well?
I don't know.
I mean, come on. Stop it's like
that.
that's some good genes going on there. You
what
know what
is?
I mean? That's some good
is
genes. One of the reasons why we didn't have children is because I don't want any part of the 50% of me. Any part of that.
You're just anywhere. Trying to end that gene pool.
Just end that gene pool.
It ends
right.
with you.
It ends. It's like it stops here. The buck stops
come
here.
Come on now.
I'm like,
come on now. Don't do
I'm like,
yourself
not
down
even,
like
not
that.
Even Bev's good genes can like bring me...
Counteract them.
They can't. It would be too
you're
like...
the dominant gene
like this animal just break through one day like... Just this psychopath.
It's like the Hulk has arrived. It was little just, baby Hulk.
It'd be a nightmare. It's just random, yeah. We totally go random with this, but yeah. It's been a weird time, hasn't it? It's been a weird time. And so... Career-wise for you guys, I think things are obviously you're talking about your job and you know you've taken a bit of a career change you know of direction, which I think a hell of a lot of us do sometimes. You know, we take a kind of I talked a lot about this with Beverly, you know, you just taking a sidestep sometimes to come round, you know, a different angle. It's not always just a linear kind of attack straightforward. You just can't do it in life.
No. And also for me, it was about taking control, I think, of taking control of my own life, my own career. I think up to that point, I've allowed other people to sort of control my life. You know, people are deciding whether I get a job or not, or people are deciding whether they like me or not, whether I'm good at it or not. And you feel like you're out of control when you're sitting waiting for that phone to ring. And you're sitting, and so I think it took a number of years really before I sort of sat up and thought, what am I doing? Why am I carrying on? I don't need this. I need to be able to take control of my own life and my own career and make decisions for myself about what I want to do. And that's not an easy thing to try and get to. It's not an easy point, I think, to reach in your life.
Do you think that affects... Because you were quite young, weren't you, when you got into...
Yeah, fairly young. It was still early 20s.
But even so, when you were young, you were doing, you know, you were doing a lot of kind of... You were doing some drama stuff and all of that.
Oh, I see what you mean. So, yeah. So when I was... Yeah, so from the age of about 11 or 12, I was doing, like, theatre, professional theatre, acting and all of that. Yeah, so absolutely.
Now... Constantly being, this is the thing that, you know, it's a great career to get into and it's amazing for children and, you know, to do that. But it must be putting yourself out there all the time like that as a young child. I don't know how it goes with your mind, you know, because you're growing and, you know, you experience new things anyway, and we're self-conscious and all of these things anyway. I wonder whether it gives you more confidence or kind of strips a little bit back, because you're always, as you said, you're always in waiting for the next job. Or do they like me? Do they do the...
It's interesting. I think when, through my childhood years, so when I first started doing stuff in theatre from about 10, 11, and through to before I went off to uni, it was never something where I had separated all of my school. So I was like, I'm not really, schooling's not that important. I'm all about the drama. I'm all about acting. This is my thing. I want to get auditions, auditions, auditions. I want to be a superstar. Mm. I was at school like everyone else. And the acting was merely, it was like a hobby. Mm. So I think growing up, for me, it was just like a, if I don't get it, I don't get it. It really wasn't, it wasn't life or death at that point.
Yeah.
And I remember it being quite clearly going into auditions and ones I didn't get. And yeah, you're a bit like, oh, a bit gutted about it. But it, honestly, it was gone like that.
Kick a football about.
Because yeah, and I'm back to school the next day. Yeah. So I think it was different for me then. Compared to maybe children, maybe if they get a massive part or if they blow up. Because mine was just really local theatre. Yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah.
But if you end up getting something huge, maybe as a child, I understand. And I think that's where you're touching
and
on is suddenly
the
they become...
Yeah, well.
And then it's all about... Because my family were never about, go on, be an actor,
right,
be an actor,
exactly.
Be an actor.
Pushy parents.
No, it was more like...
I'd be such a pushy parent. I would... Oh, my God.
You can imagine it as well. Oh, I can imagine it.
Oh, my God. I've saved a young person from having me as a parent. Oh
failure does not exist, right? That's what you'd be like. Be honest.
Stick, beat.
Oh, everything. No.
No, kidding. Honestly,
you are hilarious. So it was different. For me, it was growing up, it was different because it was more of a hobby.
Yeah.
And the parents treated it like, my parents treated it like that as well. So it was never like do or die. I didn't ever
That's nice.
I think when I got into presenting, that changed.
Mm.
When I got into presenting, so we finished uni, took a year out, wanted to still be an actor.
Where did you go to uni?
Plymouth University.
Okay.
Wanted to do teaching. So that's where I got my teaching degree, like way back when, as a backup.
Like Bev, she got her, went and did her degree and all
that. Yeah, of course she did,
yes. She knew that that was a thing just to have, just in case. I mean, I don't know what she'd ever do with it now, but, you know.
but it's there. Just in case. And that's what my mum was selling it to me. She was like, why don't you go to university, you know, get a degree, and then if you still want to do acting, go for it then, but then you always know you've got the degree. And she made, well, I fought it at the time, she made absolute sense and did it. But in that year out before I then went to an actor, I got a place at an actor's, on an acting course at a drama
Everyone
school.
Everyone should listen to this and learn this. This is like, this is sage advice, you know.
But so took a year out to earn money to pay for this course. Yeah. So I graduated, took a year out. I was going to get whatever job came up just to earn a bit of money to pay for my 1 year actor's course.
Mm.
And then while I was there, I was basically making cups of tea in a BBC radio station in my local town.
Happy days.
That was it. Making cups of tea, answering the phones, sometimes helping out the DJs by just sitting in and chatting to them about something from the newspapers. Really random stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was an advert in the BBC newspaper, which used to be called Ariel. I don't even know if it exists anymore. But it was, do you want to be a kids' TV presenter? Send a videotape to this address. So a mate of mine tore it out and went, oh, you should go for this. I'm going to be acting. I'm acting, remember? Got my acting thing. He's like, oh, God, it'll be fun. It'll be a laugh. So I asked a DJ if I could borrow their video camera, because I knew he had one. And
really?
He was like, yeah, go on. So I went to Marks and Spencer with my mate, and he just filmed me basically interviewing customers. What are you buying? Who's it for? You know, legit not in a northern accent like that. Obviously, I don't know why I put that accent on.
I like that.
But
though.
In my voice.
Yeah. But in my voice.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
I like it.
Then edited these sort of interviews together and sent it off to the BBC and then got called down to London. And then literally, like, I graduated in August 97 and I was on TV. April 98. I mean, it literally went straight on that. It was crazy. Oh, no, it was the other way around. Sorry. So I graduated. I'll do it again. So I graduated in, August 98.
Yeah.
I was on TV, like, April 99. It was crazy. So just in a very short period of time, I ended up doing children's TV and then sort of stayed in that for years and years and years and years. So it sort of came about in a really weird way.
Such a different 99 to what I was having. Let's not go there.
I could only imagine what you were like in 1999.
Let's not go there.
But it was just, it was a very weird time for me because I'd for years wanted to be acting. That was all I wanted to do was acting.
Yeah.
Never wanted to be a presenter. I'm not interested. Not my thing. I liked being somebody else.
Yeah.
And the thing about presenting is it's the complete opposite of that. You have to be genuinely. It's hard being you.
Yeah.
When you're an actor and you're performing roles, you know, if you're a bit shit, it doesn't matter because you know what? You'll be like, the script wasn't very good or that role. Oh, they just didn't like the role. The character wasn't great. But when you're a presenter and someone doesn't like you, it's quite personal. They don't like you. They don't know you, but they don't like what they see on screen. And it does get you a little bit, you know. And that's why you'd say, I mean, Angelica's brilliant because she avoids any of that. Twitter. She doesn't look at it. Whereas back in the early days, I was a proper, I'd look, I'd be like, oh, this ain't like that. Right. But you don't do it because there'll be 100 nice comments and there'll be one negative comment and that one negative comment's the one that's going to eat you up.
That's how we're
and it's
wired,
crazy.
We're wired for that, aren't we? That's taken us back to when we're evolving. You know, we're always looking for the negatives, for the terror around the corner, the animal attacking us around the corner. So we're always looking for that negative. Right. We're just wired that way. But it's what you do with that negative, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like something, I love all that
stuff.
Yeah,
but it's true, too, because it's how you deal with it.
And how did you deal with it
initially, it would hurt.
Yeah.
Even though who is this person?
Yeah.
Why, you know, now, in hindsight, I get it and I'm like, whatever, it's water off a duck's back. But I think when you're that bit younger and a bit, you know, not aware of the world, or like me, you care too much about what people think, that sometimes someone saying that has an effect. But actually what you have to realise is they're doing that on purpose. They want a reaction.
It's very difficult. Like I read a lot of books and, you know, I've educated myself through kind of self-help books and this and that, you know, just business books and mindset and all of that. You can read it all, but when it happens, to still not allow your monkey brain to kind of, you know, to kind of go, you know, is hard.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not used to it. So if you're thrust into that, and that's one of the reasons why I did this podcast, to find out, you know, the other side of things and you know, because you've had, this is why this is fascinating for me, and I'm so grateful for you coming on, and it's such an egoless thing to do, and there's not a lot of people that would do it, is to explore. You've got the double angle of it, and it's, you know, it's such an interesting story for other people who are going into this career or struggling with feeling a certain way. I think it's invaluable, you know, the life lessons.
And the mental health aspect is obviously huge now, because it feels like that taboo's gone away, because there was a huge taboo about talking about mental health, especially for men. I mean, you just didn't do it.
Never.
You didn't do it. Maybe even with your best mate down the pub, you might joke about it, but it was never something you would... Whereas now...
You'd only hug your mate after like 6 pints of Stella, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
That was it.
It's like you wouldn't do it, because otherwise, wow, what? Yeah. Don't do that. It's like...
We didn't even hug, did we? Like 10, 12 years ago, I can't... Or like when I was 20, I can't remember hugging... I can't remember a lot about my 20s, but I can't remember hugging everyone like you do now.
Right. It's only Corona that stops us hugging today, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, we would have done. We've gone in for the embrace. It's just different. So the world is different now, which is great.
Yeah.
And the fact that we can have that mental health conversation is great. And you can see the impact that things like social media has on people's mental health in this business.
Mm.
And that's whether it's music or it's TV. I mean, look at Love Island, for example, and the horrific results have happened from that. And that has been traced back to the fact they couldn't deal with how social media sort of either attacked them or surrounded them or suffocated them.
It's thrust upon. It's the same as X Factor and all them shows. If you don't... not everyone, but a lot of the time, if you just thrust someone in front of an audience of like how many people, in front of a world of 7 million, you know, viewers or whatever, and then social media and blah 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 blah, if you thrust someone in on that level, how are they ready for that? Like, how can they possibly be? They haven't done 10 years of, you know, small pubs and getting booed at and things thrown at you and traipsing around guitar playing or singing in a pub here, there and everywhere. You've got to be able to handle a lot of these things sometimes, you have to go through the process.
Yeah.
And if you don't, like you went through the process, you know, you started off and same with Angela and same with Bev, you know, same with me. You have to kind of go, you have to, as Gary Vee says, you have to be prepared to shovel shit.
Right.
You know, and then you get to something good.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think you have to know, in fact, do you know what? I remember chatting to somebody who was on, was it one of the early series of Love Island or Big Brother? It was one of them. But basically they said, when they went into that show, they were basically just a normal member of the public.
Hmm.
And they have to hand in their mobile phone. And the ones that had it, I think they had an Instagram account or they had a Twitter account, and they said on there was maybe 108 followers. Turn their phone off, it's all gone, they go into the show, they come out of the show, they turn it back on, there's almost 1 million followers. So you go from that, and imagine how you deal with that when you turn your phone back on and suddenly you've got 1 million people who've just suddenly started following you. There's hundreds of thousands of messages. Yeah. probably tens of thousands of people saying something quite off about you. You're absorbing
the
all
senses
of that.
Can't take we're only designed to have, you know, again, you know, in our tribe, 150 people.
Right.
That's, you know, still how our brains are wired. You know, we haven't evolved enough, apparently, like, so, you know, all the clever people.
Even 150 feels a lot. Does that feel like a lot?
We know, but that was our tribe, you know. That was a camp of, you know,
that was a
little village.
Tribe.
Yeah, a little village. Yeah, it was like a good
that's
tribe.
A good tribe.
You know, but you've got a village, 150 people back in the day, and everyone had their roles, and now, right, you know, right, so right. you would be doing that. That's why, apparently, a lot of what's gone... People are getting lost and depressed and all of those things are because we've lost our sense of, you know, having a role in society, right. Or, you know, doing something for, oh, well, he does that. He goes get the water, or he goes and gets the fire, or he goes kill, you know, squirrel or whatever. So, you know.
That would have been your job.
It would have been, yeah.
Where's James? We need some more squirrels. Go send him out. Get the squirrel
with
guy
a
out
small
there.
Pocket knife.
And just your hands.
Okay.
Just your hands. He's out there. He's getting them. He's catching them.
Throwing rocks at squirrels really badly.
It takes him ages to catch a
squirrel. The whole camp would be so hungry. Everyone would be.
You would definitely have to swap jobs.
It'd be like a weight loss camp. It'd be a weight loss retreat.
Well, which also fits as well. They would be healthy. It would be actually not perhaps not healthy.
Hold on,
it'd
be the first health retreat.
Oh,
I just went back in time and I didn't, did I? No.
Oh dear. We've just gone on to squirrels. And
we've gone.
Right,
yeah,
it's gone completely.
That's the beauty of these podcasts. I just think
tangent much.
It's great. But it does go. You know, I think the whole kind of social media and you know what you've been through, you know, to go from it being in the limelight as well, you've talked about this yourself, you know, how did it I mean, you know, you had years of being on TV and good success, and I mean you did a lot of stuff, and I mean, what was your biggest accolade for you? What was your biggest self-achievement that you were like, oh yeah,
I mean, it's difficult because in TV, it's quite fickle. Do you know what I mean? So for me, to turn around and go, my biggest accolade was when I hosted this show. Because actually, really, when you say it out loud, it doesn't. It's like, oh my god, that it? That's my.
But do you know what?
I mean, if you ask me what my favourite show I presented was, it would have been Jungle Run, which was a kids show I did.
Okay,
and my favourite show. It was like the Crystal Maze for kids, but set in the jungle.
Oh,
it was it was genuinely hands down. I loved it. It was hard. It's the hardest job probably I did.
Yeah,
because you were spending like 18 hours a day filming, and you have different groups of children. I'd have like different children for like 8 hours a day,
and this is what people don't realize, how hard work it is being a presenter.
It can be massively.
It's like the hours you have to do, and it's not like, you know, and being an actor and all of that, I think people give people a hard time in that industry because it's like, oh, you just, you know, but there's a lot of work, you know, it's like hours wise and all of that. I mean,
I think it's a weird one. It's not, because it's not digging holes in a road.
No.
And it's not, you know, it's not laborious work in that sense. It's not like really, really physical work in that sense. What it is it's quite mentally taxing.
And you have to be on.
Yeah, it is, you know, a bit like that. It's about being aware, and it's having that skill. Learning lines is a lot harder than it appears.
Tell me about it. I can't even remember my own name. Michael, seriously, I'm like,
that's too many bangs on
it's
head,
a good
though,
job I've got it
head.
There because I'm in trouble. I have to, every now and then, like, oh yeah, that's my name.
But it's those things, so this, which are skills you develop. I mean, I was a shocker at first. Like anything, you do it enough and you get better and you get better.
Theoretically, that doesn't work for everyone.
In theory, the more you do something, hopefully you will get better at it. There's that 10,000 hours rule, isn't there? That's what they say. You do something for 10,000 hours
but
and then you become quite proficient.
But isn't it weird sometimes when you're young and you've worked with people when they're older and they're like, they're rubbish at their job. I don't know whether it's like because you come in as like the young buck and think, yeah, I'm better than everyone. But you look at them, you're like, how are you doing this?
Yeah, I mean, there absolutely are going to be people, aren't there, that have been in the same job for a long period of time.
I think we give up. Yeah. That's the thing.
You just have to sort of suck it up. There's always going to be that person that just manages to blag their way through somehow. And although you see it, I'm not saying mentioning any names, although you see it, you know, they don't. And sometimes the people around them don't.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, isn't it? Where they're surrounded by people that have it all the time. They don't even notice it anymore. Yeah. It just becomes, oh, that's just them.
Yeah.
But they're shit. No, no, it's just them. It's fine, it's fine. It's perfectly good. So, but let's go back to it. So, I suppose for me, what was interesting was that I got to a point in my career where things were going really well, but things started quieting down. Mm. Now, Angelica and I, because we've been together, we've known each other for 20 years now.
Wow. Yeah.
And been together, what, just over half of that, so since 2008.
Nice.
And our careers have always gone flip-flopped. So there's been times where she's been doing brilliantly and I've been quiet, or I've been doing brilliantly and she's been quiet, and that's always been the case.
Mm-hmm.
And then up to about 2016, 2017, my career got quiet. It did get quiet. There wasn't much going around. Things had changed. Bosses had changed. Mm. So
I talked about that earlier.
Yeah, I'd backed myself into a particular corner at a particular channel. And then as soon as the bosses of that channel changed, you're sort of left almost in the wilderness a bit, because then suddenly they want something new, but you've alienated everyone else because you just, you tied your flag to that particular mast.
Yeah, yeah.
So therefore I had to make a decision. Now I could have just plugged along, and for a while I was just, bits here, bits there, or just chasing emails here, emails there. Angelica's career was rocketing, which was brilliant. Mm. But I think it came to a point where I had to do something about it.
How long was that period?
It probably 18 months, 2 years.
I like to get a bit deep. So yeah. I do, all joking, I do like to joke. But I also, part of this is the whole how we deal with stuff. Because I've been through my own battles and, own insecurities and everything. And it's difficult when... Another reason why I wanted to do this is to explore how the ego is, because we're men, we want to be like the provider, we want to do this, and how did you feel in those times about
Well, I think it was twofold, really. There was the feeling of failure. So there's that feeling of that you hadn't succeeded in what you were doing, or you had to admit that it had come to an end. After 20 years of presenting, it's done. Is it done? That's it? Failed? I haven't managed to do it? Didn't quite get to that level? And do I call it a day? Mm. And then there's that providing thing where you want to be the guy who's bringing in the money to the house and doing it. Yeah, yeah. It is. And listen, look, you and I both know with our respective partners that they are strong, independent, dominant women. We knew that when we got with them in the first place.
Yeah.
So we knew that that role was, we're not going to be in that position where and they're the ones like, oh, can we? That was never going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's not what we are.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop you from wanting to sort of do your bit. And I think that's what it was for me. I still wanted to do my bit.
Yeah.
And up to that point, I had been doing my bit, which was great.
Yeah. We've been more than, yeah.
Yeah, it'd been 50-50 and more. We've been, that's how it was.
Yeah,
but real. I had to sort of get to the realization or to the point of going, no, I need to do something else because this isn't working. I can't be sat around the house all day and getting intermittent work. It just isn't happening. So what can I do? How can I suddenly take control and forget about what people might think? Because that was another thing as well. You worry about what people are going to think.
As massively as blokes.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the biggest issues as a man, to go, oh, what are my friends going to think, or their friends, or this person, or that person, or how are they going to feel? I don't think a lot of people see what goes on in the background of the support network and stuff that someone out of the spotlight has to give to the person in the spotlight. That's a huge thing as well. There's and having two of you, you're constantly I think supporting yourself, oh, great, and then it must have been a mad dynamic.
It's bizarre. And also you're sort of dealing with the bumping into people in the street where they'll be like, well, didn't you used to be on the telly? That line. And at first I'd be a bit like, yeah, that's me, and a little bit gutted about it. But after I was like, yeah, I did, but I don't anymore. Now I'm doing teaching more than that.
Mm.
And actually I've changed what I'm doing. And I think, again, it's owning something. It's having the confidence to own it. It's having the confidence to feel proud of decisions that you make. You should never, don't make a decision and then regret it instantly.
Mm.
Otherwise, why did you make that decision? Mm. You've made a decision for a reason, and you've got to stand by that and sort of see. I mean, after amount of time, maybe if it hasn't worked out, you sort of reassess. But I think you really have to sort of let something bed in, and you have to go, let's give this a go. And I think that's what I wanted to do. And so let's make a change, let's do it, and let's see how it goes. And
how hard was that for you in that, and that period, how long did that take for you to go, right, I just need to pull through this? And was it a big
Yeah, it was long. I mean, it was got to be coming up to probably a year and a half, two years. I mean, possibly of to and fro, and lots of conversations with Angelica, and lots of sort of sitting down, having to think about what I want. Lot of that, and sort of think, is this the right decision to make? And I sort of did it bit by bit. So I sort of approached the school initially and just started working for them a couple of days a week, really voluntarily. It was just sort of dipping my toe in. I think I was never going to be a throw myself in at 100%. It was always going to be, let's just try it out at first and see how it feels. And I did really enjoy it, and it did seem to be going really well, which was great. And then the school wanted me to do some more, and then I started freaking out, because then suddenly 2 days a week doesn't seem so bad. But then 3 days a week seems a lot more. That's over half that 5 day week, and you know.
Yeah.
But I think again,
no one likes working 5 days a week.
No, you ask teachers, they'll be like, 3 days a week is teach perfect.
Yeah, exactly. But I think for me,
it was more about not using up days that might suddenly a job will come in and I'll be a presenter again. You know, it was that.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, I can do 2 days at the school because I've got the rest of the week to be a presenter potentially if something comes up. Yeah. I think there's always that if the phone call goes.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem with our business is, and you know, in the music business and TV business and the film business, it does just take one job.
Yeah.
In TV, it is one phone. This is the frustrating thing. It's not even like it's inane to wait for the phone to ring, because actually, sometimes that phone will ring and it'll be one job, and that job will be the one that takes you and off you go.
Yeah.
You know, it was Holly Willoughby is a perfect example of being children's TV presenter like I was, then Dancing on Ice started.
Right.
And the ITV exec at the time gave her that job straight from children's TV, which is unheard of at the time.
Right.
Just don't do that.
Yeah.
But that stepping stone, she went from being watched by a million children on a Saturday morning to being watched by 11, 12 million adults on a Saturday or Sunday night. And that was it. Then she went, and that first year was ropey. Mm. But after that, she got brilliant at it. And then look, the rest is history. And that's all it takes in this business. It's bizarre.
Funny, you're right. And you don't see that. You don't look at that. So I didn't even think about that. The transition from children's TV into adult TV is huge, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, everyone goes, oh, they're a presenter, they can do everything.
No.
It doesn't work like that,
does
it?
And many people fall by the wayside.
Yeah.
It is a transitional point. And I've got lots of friends who weren't able to make that jump, or friends that have to decide to stay in that genre. And be so like long term, but we talk about the Chuckle Brothers. Mm. The Chuckle Brothers made a decision.
The Chuckle Brothers.
They were brilliant children's entertainers, and they stayed in that for their career.
Yeah,
and they made a lot of money because they knew what they were and they targeted themselves. I think sometimes we're so keen to get out of it as children. As I'm talking as a children's TV presenter, we're so keen to get out of it. Like, oh, I'm feeling older now. I'm in my 30s now. I'm going to get out of children's TV. But actually, you know, sometimes that might have been the best place to keep that individual.
Yeah.
I don't think that was necessarily me.
Yeah.
I think I got out at the right time, and I was very fortunate again because I got to step into GMTV. So I went into entertainment and film was what I always loved.
Mm.
So when I was doing my children's TV, I'd always do those press junkets for films where you go and speak to them in hotels and chat to the stars.
Yeah,
I love my films.
Yeah.
So then to get that job going to LA all the time was brilliant. So that was my transition. That was my bridge from children's to adult TV. But adult TV, sounds like I've gone into porn.
Yeah.
It wasn't porn, obviously. It's a grown-up
thing. That's not what
that's what we're saying. I started children's TV and ended up in adult TV.
That's what we're saying on camera.
So that was my transition. It's okay. But it is a weird transition. Yeah. And it's one, there's a lot of stress around it. I mean, I know I went through it. Angelica went through it. I know a lot of my friends that went through that transition. Some made it and some didn't. And it's tough. It is really tough.
And I mean, Angelica's obviously, you know, I used to be a gaffer. So I worked with her years ago. I did an airport shoot and I messed up so bad. I was like, I forgot my passport and we were going back.
Brilliant.
It was horrendous. But, you know, I made it good in the end, luckily. I had to drive home very fast on my motorbike and ride back. But anyway,
there's more to that story.
Yeah, there is more.
He's totally skipped through that.
That was insane, anyway.
He does not want to incriminate
But
himself.
She's, you know, obviously doing very well now and just going from strength to strength. So it must be... I'm always super proud of Bev, you know, and just seeing her, it was weird. I get quite nervous. So I don't get nervous. I get angry, which is like my default setting for my emotions, which is odd. Just straight there. Yeah. So I go like, if Bev's got a new show or whatever and she comes out on stage, I start looking around at people like if anyone's like saying anything nasty or something. I'm like, I'm ready to get up and like go and slap people. I'm like, because that's my protectiveness. Yeah. So I'm like, that's how I show my protectiveness, which is not the way to be. Everyone out there, don't do that. But it's just how I am. So how do you still, do you feel that way? Do you feel protective towards Angelica? Like more because she's in the limelight, or do you like, can you kind of put a level on that? Because I think I feel more protective some ways in bed, but then others I don't. But it's weird.
It's a weird one. I mean, a lot of people always say that is it difficult for you because you're both presenters? Mm. And so Angelica's career is doing really well, and you've had to change your career, so that must be hard. You know, is there a bit of resentment? Is there an issue there about that?
Yeah, I go and beat her every night.
I hate her. No, the fact is no, because what it is? Firstly, I live vicariously through her, so it's actually incredibly exciting. And you'll know this with Bev, when they do something amazing, or they get invited somewhere amazing, we're like, this is brilliant.
We can't do that. It's social distance.
Virtual high five.
High five.
You know, you're sort of living with them. You're living through it with them. So I go through it with her.
Yeah.
And so I love that. Yeah. So I'm massively supportive. I get to see it. She gets to do some brilliant stuff, but I'm sort of there with her.
Right. This is one question I've got. What is the best thing that you've been to, that you've done, that you've sat, you've been doing, and you've been like, oh my God, how did like two people from wherever end up?
Well, this, I'm not going to be able to top your story, so, because your story is awesome. No. Because I know a couple of yours, and it might not even be the one you go for, but if it isn't one that you go for, it's even more annoying, because I know some of the ones you and Bev have done, which are so awesome. Prince, anybody? But I'm not even going to go there. I don't know, what's been amazing? I mean, getting to see Whitney and meet Whitney was awesome.
Nice.
And that was just before she went way off craziness. Oh. She was mid-craziness, but she hadn't... That
was cool.
Legendary, because Whitney was she was my first crush.
Oh.
She was proper, like, that. I want to dance with somebody, how she looked in that video, the poster of that. Oh, like, oh my God. So Whitney, for me, hands down, has always been amazing. Like, just like... You know, she was a little bit crazy. I don't get starstruck. And it was, I don't even know if it was a starstruck. It was just like a weird moment of like weirdness.
I'm 12 again.
It was just so awesome. But the trouble is, she just performed. She was uber sweaty. And like this strap on her dress had broken. And she looked a little bit like, do you know what I mean? It wasn't quite the image.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? When you imagine something like, amazing and but it didn't matter because you felt like you're just in the presence of this amazing performer and person, and
that's cool. I'm not even gonna go.
Oh, shut up. You know you've got better. You know
I'm not.
On.
That is,
I don't
like,
mind you one upping. It's
that's
not a problem.
Super cool. No,
please one up me.
That is an amazing. That is. Do you know what? There's been so many mad moments, but
Bev, didn't Prince invite Bev personally to come and perform?
Yeah, to LA. I didn't go to that one.
That doesn't matter. It happened.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on. So what about for you then?
I think the first time when I'd been with Bev 3 months and she was doing the warm-up for Prince at these 21 nights. And I when I was young, my sister was a massive Prince fan. I mean, insane. Shout out to my sister. She was like a maniac Prince fan, and she made me watch like Purple Rain about 784 times, and some other stuff as well, like other like girly stuff that I'd have to watch. And you know, like I want to dance with somebody.
Don't hate on that.
Girls,
song.
No, girls just want to have fun. The film.
Oh wow, okay.
She made me watch that about 700 times. I can still see it in my mind. It's scarred me.
Made
for life.
You watch it. Yeah, right.
Scarred me for life. Okay. Just so you know. So she was a massive Prince fan. And then I thought, oh, I'm done with Prince. And then I met Bev and I was like, oh my God, another mad Prince fan. Anyway, 3 months after meeting Bev, she does the 21 nights. Yeah. And then he invited her to do the after shows. Now that was surreal. So my brother and my sister came and I was backstage with Bev, side of stage, while Prince, you know, met Prince. Yeah. You know, it was just one of them. And it was so lovely. And then I get to see Bev on stage, and then Bev does her solo bit, and he just turns back to his band and is like, damn. And I'm just like, what? This is insane. And then, you know, that was for me, still gives me goosebumps today. That was
it's
cool.
It's one of those moments, right? It's one of those moments.
But
it's
like, we do get, like, this life that we do lead, it is an up and down, but it's like any life is an up and down. But it's a bit more public.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that got me when we first got together was you two kind of got together and didn't have any kind of secrets because you've both been in the public eye and stuff.
And we've been friends for a long time. So we talked, and which was brilliant. We'd been known each other for 8 years before we got together as a couple, which weirdly wasn't as odd as it perhaps you'd think, you know, being friends and suddenly going that extra step. But actually it was brilliant because exactly that. We sort of knew each other. We knew the careers we were doing. We knew the highs and lows of it to that point. And we'd been through it together, a lot of it. So that massively helps. You sort of come together at a thing where the understanding is balanced.
It helps so much.
Yeah. And even now, with that whole I'm not presenting as much bits, but Angelica's doing incredibly well. We sort of work together on stuff. So she'll come and she'll go, look, I've got this script team, what do you think? And I'll read through it. And I'll be like, why don't we change that? And we could do this. And why don't you say that? And I said, that's not really you, is it? Why don't you tweet that? You know, we'll have these conversations. So it's still a partnership. It's not like I've suddenly had to step away and be like, oh, this isn't
my
thing
anymore. So that's one thing that always gets me, because the more I've been, the longer I've been with Beverly, the more I'm drawn into what this is, you know, into the world, because it's just all encompassing. Everything, there's so many decisions to make, so many things going on, you know, and Bev to try and make all of them on her own, you know, even with management and agents and all that, it's still difficult. I need a support network, so god damn, so does she, you know, and you guys must, and that's what I think. The more I do of these podcasts, I think, you know, the more people will be, I think it'll be a partnership of like how we help each other out. You know, even obviously we do it in marriage anyway, but I think when you're in the public eye, you need that support network at home to be strong and, you know, not to be, you know, insecure and all of that. Yeah. And because that's a big thing for blokes, to not have that ego and that insecurity and let their women, you know, shine and be that. I love that. Yeah, I love the fact.
I love it. It gives me great pride. I'm so proud of her seeing what she does. It's amazing. It's brilliant.
She annoys me how good she is.
Yeah, she has. Like, you know, she has some skills. That girl, there's no doubt.
Annoys the hell out of me. But you know, I'm kidding.
Because you know the MasterChef story. Because I've given you the brief.
I can't believe you two. Annoyingly, you came.
Well, yeah. So I did in 2013.
I can't believe she upped you.
I did in 2013, and I was a finalist. And so I was in the top three. It was amazing. So I come home, I'm like, wait, I was a finalist.
Whatever.
And then whenever she's cooking, I'm like, you need a bit more salt in that. I'd be like, Greg said you need to do it that way because I did it and he liked it. So all of this. So for 4 years of that, after being a finalist on MasterChef, because I'd be like, I'm a MasterChef finalist, babe. Come on, you know. Like this. Bit partially teasing, but occasionally, he did need more salt.
Yeah.
But otherwise, anyway, then it comes around 2017 and she gets a call saying, oh, Celebrity MasterChef are looking for people. They'd love to have you on the show. And she's like, oh, no, I don't want to do it because Michael did it 4 years ago. And I was like, babe, you should do this. It'd be good for you. Secret thinking, I was a finalist. You should go on it. It'd be brilliant. And, you know, I can always sort of give some advice and stuff. It'd be fine. She was like, I'm not sure if I want it. Anyway, completely convinced her to do it. She did it and then won it. Literally won the freaking show. Like, of course she bloody won it. Do you know what I mean?
I can't believe that.
You know, that's classic Angelica.
She's no joke. She's literally, like, she starts off, well, I'm not, and then she's like, same with Bev. And I'm not very competitive, and then on there, then they just switch.
That's it. They've got something.
They're not right.
I don't know what it is. It's amazing.
Right. Yeah.
But obviously a little bit annoying because now I have to see that in MasterChef trophy every morning when I wake up.
I should have got you to bring them both.
In the freaking face.
I would have accidentally pushed the other one over.
I'm telling you.
Do you know Bev won Celebrity Mastermind?
Did she? What was her specialist?
Prince.
Of course it was.
She won it against some like heavy hitters.
That's awesome. I was like, so she must have nailed the general knowledge round.
Dude, she smashed it. The whole thing. She was just like, I was so proud. I was like, honestly,
win it, and Angelica hasn't done it yet. She's not doing it because if she does it, she'll only win it, won't she? I don't need that sort of
you don't need that
ego deflation again.
Yeah.
But no, it's, do you know what? There's something about it. There's something great about it because actually that win as well, and whether it was the fact that I was a finalist that drove her on or whether the fact that she's just very, very driven, that win changed her career. And we talk about
funny,
these things,
it,
but it really did. It changed. Like, it suddenly, there was more attention, more interest, and the work started coming in. And she was getting good work before, but it changed. There's no doubt it changed, and she'll be the first to admit that as well. And it seems crazy that to win, you know, a celebrity reality show like that can do that, but it can.
Yeah. And that's the balance, isn't it? It's that is the balance between what jobs you take and what jobs you don't. And, you know, and I suppose it's, you know, it's choice. It's the same as with anything in life. The choices you make, you know, that you just have to, if you're going to make them, own them.
Yeah.
Do it the best you can and don't look back. You just, you know, it's great to have a kind of eye in the past of what you've done, but focus on what you can do now and then potentially what's in the future. And what's your kind of advice for other couples like us who have a partner that's, you know, maybe earns more or is a better, in a seen better job or more successful? What have you got anything that you kind of live by that you...
I mean, I suppose firstly, it would be to remember you're a partnership. I think it's very easy. Yes, of course, you individuals, but when it comes to careers and the household and life, you're a partnership. Mm. And that's what's got to remain strong. Because I think any time you suddenly start going, oh, but she's got this and I've got that, or haven't got that, or you start separating yourself, and then that causes a bit of barrier. And then that's where that little resentment can sneak in. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly things change, the dynamic changes. You've got to remember you're a partnership, you're together, you're working through this. You know, who's to say that Bev would be in a much worse place now if it hadn't been for you?
Do
you know what I mean?
I've made her so successful. I am honestly, it's all down to me.
I know what it is. It's about having you there, though, isn't it? It's having you there as that support.
Yeah.
And it's the same for Angelica and myself. I mean,
you just don't know yet.
You don't know how
you
that
do
is.
What you can.
The dynamic works because it works, because the two of you are. I mean, something I always stand by is never be afraid about being afraid. So never be afraid to take something on that is going to make you feel like it's way out of your comfort zone.
Mm.
That's something that's how I read into that, is it's very easy to let fear control you and to stop you from doing things. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know what? If you just take that, if you grab hold of that fear and go with it.
Go towards the fear.
The feeling you will get after that will be immense.
Yeah.
And it will show you that you can do something. A lot of there's too much can't. And will that sound like Obama from
no,
the
No, no,
years
no, don't. No, no.
You know, you
please.
Can, can't you? You can properly, you can track, do something. If it makes you scared, that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. That actually could mean it's quite a good thing to do. You know?
It's like the whole anxiety thing now. It's like we need anxiety to make us do things. You know, I'm trying to kill myself with a mic. That's part of how we kind of, you know that something means something. So don't always take, you know, we're feeling anxious as a negative, you know, and we can push forwards and, you know, and hey, who knows, you know, you can win the day and,
you know, crack on. Having said that, it might not work out.
Yeah, but
you know,
it is
but you might
is.
Not work out. But you might be scared of something.
You learn something.
It might be out of your comfort zone, but you will always learn something. Yeah. You will always learn something. And I say to this day, as a presenter, I did present for 20 years, I didn't know it all. Every day I would go in and I'd learn something different, or I'd go, I won't do that again, or I shouldn't say that, that doesn't really work. Or it's and it should be like that for everything you do. Mm. Whoever you are, whatever job you have or haven't got, just how you run your life. Just remember to always be learning. Always be learning. You don't ever, no one ever knows it all.
Done.
No one does. And if you think you do, you're a fool. You will always learn. Always.
Love it.
And
you know
that's
what?
Really important.
That's the way to end the podcast. You've just smashed it. You've summed everything up. Honestly, you've summed everything up. Again, super grateful for you being here, mate. And you've been an absolute joy. And you and Angelica are an amazing couple of people, parents. And, you know, I wish you all the best.
Thank you, man.
So, nice one, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks a lot.